One of Sherlock Holmes's most famous maxims, repeated here by a kid on the Hungry Earth episode of Doctor Who after a body goes missing from a grave.
There's only one explanation as far as I can see.
What's that then?
The graves eat people, devour them whole, leaving no trace.
Not sure about that.
They didn't steal the body from above. They couldn't have got it from the sides. Only other thing is, they get in from underneath.
Not very likely though.
When you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
But while this maxim has been repeated, not just on Doctor Who, but also on The X-Files, Star Trek, and in courtrooms across the country, it's also been criticized as the Holmesian fallacy. And that's because we're generally pretty terrible about ruling out all other possibilities before arriving at our final verdict. Think a mother being convicted of her daughter's death based on a doctor's diagnosis of shaken baby syndrome, only to find out years later that the child actually had a bleeding disorder. Or a man convicted of arson based on crazed glass in his home, only to find out decades later that the crazed glass was actually caused by the water from the firefighters' hoses and not an accelerant used by the man. With regard to the death of Doran Lanier, there was no direct evidence that Pam Lanier murdered her husband and no obvious source of the arsenic that caused his death. And yet, Dorian died from both chronic and acute arsenic poisoning, and Pam was his primary caretaker in the 2 months leading up to his death. And so, when the state eliminated the impossible, it was left with the one result that, no matter how improbable, must have been the truth. Pam had taken the life of her husband.
Hi, and welcome to Undisclosed, the State versus Pam Lanier. This is the third in a series of four episodes on the case of Pam Lanier, who was convicted of the 1997 murder of her husband, Doran, in Chincapin, North Carolina. My name is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author of Adnan Story, and as always, I'm here with my colleagues, Susan Simpson and Colin Miller.
I'm Susan Simpson. I'm an attorney with the Volkov Law Group, and I blog at viewfromll2.com.
I'm Colin Miller. I'm an associate dean and professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
In September 1997, Doran and Pam Lanier had a successful turkey farming business, taking home about $20,000 every few months under a contract with Nash Johnson & Sons. At the time, Doran was 56 years old and Pam was 41. On the morning of either September 1st or 2nd, Doran went out to use his bulldozer to do some work at a rest home in nearby Holly Ridge in connection with a job that he was doing with a man named James David Brock.
How do you learn that he's in this accident?
He comes home and he can't get out of the truck. And then when he finally does get out of the truck, he's limping and he's dragging that leg some.
Okay.
And
how
I went running to the door. His leg is all like, well, it was bloody at the time. Mm-hmm. Where what had happened, he was sitting in the dozer's chair, seat, and where the gear shift is, a tree come in and pinned it up against him. And it hit him right in here on this part of his leg. And it was really, it was nasty looking. So we cleaned it up the best way we could, and I told him, I said, we need to go get you checked, you know, and see if you're all right. He said, I'm gonna wait and see what it looks like tomorrow. Well, the next day it was just black and blue. It was just already turning. Mm-hmm. And we finally, I can't remember exactly, but it was more than a day or two, I think, before I ever got him to go to the doctor. It was after the fact. It wasn't like that day or the next day. I think it was like 2 or 3 days after that, he finally went to the doctor.
And during those 2 or 3 days...
Because it wasn't healing and it was bothering him.
Right. During those 2 or 3 days, were you trying to convince him to go to the doctor?
Yes.
And what's he saying?
No.
During those 2 to 3 days after the bulldozer accident, a couple of other significant things happened that had important ramifications for Pam's trial. First, Pam called James David Brock. Here's a pertinent part of Brock's testimony at trial.
Pam called me after he was hurt, and in fact, Doran called me, wanting to go to finish the job. We were doing a rest home in Hollow Ridge, and I told him if I got a chance, I would, but I know I didn't have time to. But Pam called me and wanted me to go talk with him, said that Doran was sick, said he needed to go to the doctor.
Brock would then clarify that...
Pam called me and said, James, Doran is sick. He needs to go to the doctor. She said, he'll listen to you. Come here and talk with him.
But then when Brock did stop by the Lanier house the next evening, Pam's son Dustin told him that his mom and dad weren't home. Both Brock and his wife Doris would testify at trial that Pam later admitted to them that she had told her son a lie because, quote, Dorn was not up to having company that day. In isolation, this might not seem significant, but at trial, the prosecution connected it up with the testimony of a woman named Allie Bradshaw, which takes us to the second significant event in the days after Doran's bulldozer accident.
And at some point, Allie Bradshaw
yes.
comes to stay with you. What are the circumstances of her?
Her husband kicked her out. He beat her and kicked her out. Mm-hmm. And I knew her, and Doran knew her from school.
This was to be a mutually beneficial relationship. After her husband had kicked her out, Allie didn't have a place to stay, and Pam needed help with her daughter, Kayla, as well as with Doran after his accident. In a trial, Bradshaw would testify,
Doran had gotten hurt on the bulldozer, so Pam was, like, taking care of him, and she said, she just wanted me to help out with Kayla, you know. I was there to help Pam and to really help with Kayla. Kayla was really upset about her daddy getting hurt because she really loved Doran to death.
According to Bradshaw, this all happened in the days after Doran's bulldozer accident. By the time of trial, though, for reasons we'll get into later, Bradshaw would end up testifying as a witness for the prosecution, and she would testify that there were times that Pam would prevent family and friends from seeing Doran while he was ill. Importantly, though, Bradshaw never identified any specific people that Pam prevented from seeing Doran, and in fact, she testified to several friends and family who did visit Doran during the 2 months that she lived with the Laniers. So the only example that the jurors heard in which Pam prevented others from seeing Doran was the incident described by James and Doris Brock. And you don't have to take our word for it, because in defending Pam's murder conviction on appeal, the state would only cite to testimony by Bradshaw and the Brocks on this point. Instead, the thrust of the state's argument was that Pam had failed to seek proper medical attention for Doran in the months after his accident, which the state argued was proof that she was poisoning him. So, to understand what they're trying to claim here, let's break this down into a few parts. Was it clear that Doran needed medical attention? Yes, he was definitely in need of that. This is one of the two instances in which the Deadly Woman episode about Pam's case is actually accurate.
It wasn't long, within weeks of the accident, saw Doran in basically an incapacitated state, almost in a stupor.
Rest, my sweet.
Dorian was described by others as being a zombie.
And that takes us to the second point, which is that Doran's condition wasn't fixed over those 2 months. It had an ebb and a flow, and he'd have good days and bad days, and in some days he was worse than he was on others. Nearly every day, Pam's nephew, Mitchell Sanders, would come by the farm in the time between the bulldozer accident and Doran's death. And here's what he had to say about Doran during that time.
Before that, it's just trying to help him, and some days he'd be okay, some days he wouldn't, and just trying to get things done that he couldn't do.
And here's what Pam had to say about her husband's condition after the bulldozer accident.
Doran would be fine one today, mm-hmm. all right? Maybe tomorrow he wouldn't. Mom and Dad come over. That's when I really started noticing a lot of weird stuff. Mom and Dad come over one night with a pie, a chocolate pie, which is my favorite. And she asked him, did he want some? And he said, yeah. And she cut it, and then he spit it back out in the plate, or and he just don't do things like that. You know, just he started acting. Then he started having, like, speech, slur of his speech sometimes. Just things that just didn't add up. And then you could be talking to him later, and he would be totally talking to you normal. Or then he would flip back to the slur or not acting like he was thinking rationally.
You know, it's not easy to get folks to agree on much of anything nowadays, but if there is anything we can all agree on, it's this. We all need more sleep. And getting a great night's sleep is easier and more affordable than you think, because you don't need an expensive new mattress and you don't need sleeping pills. What you need to do is change your sheets. That's why you should check out Boll & Branch. Every single thing that Boll & Branch makes, from the bedding to the blankets, it's made out of 100% pure organic cotton. So they start off really super soft when you get them, and they just get softer over time. And you buy directly for them, so you're kind of cutting out the middleman and you're paying wholesale prices. You're getting luxury sheets that honestly can cost up to like $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everybody who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. They have thousands of five-star reviews, and Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, and Fast Company are all talking about Boll & Branch. Even three U.S. presidents sleep on Boll & Branch sheets, and hey, so do I. Now, shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund, but I doubt you're going to want to send them back. Still, there's no risk, and there's no reason to not give them a try. So, to get you started, right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com using the promo code UNDISCLOSED. Go to bollandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets. That's boll, B-O-L-L, and branch.com, and use the promo UNDISCLOSED. bollandbranch.com, promo code UNDISCLOSED.
In particular, there were two extended periods when Doran left the turkey farm and seemed to be doing well after his bulldozer accident. The first was toward the beginning of October, when the Laniers went with their friends Tom and Paige Hatcher to the Great Smoky Mountains in Dollywood. Here's Tom Hatcher.
But the place like Maggie Valley and Dollywood and stuff around, and we had a good time, and like he drove the whole time good, and he said, Tom, do you mind if I drive some nights? And you can drive. I said, I'd rather ride and drive anyhow. And he drove majority of the time there, only time he didn't really drive, just go back to the drinking part. He said, Tom, do you mind if Paige drives? That way, I mean, you take a drink. I said, fine with me, you know. But he done the majority of the driving. And some people said about later on, but so I said, nah, that can't be the case. I said, we just got back from the mountains with him.
Tom has a bit of a thick accent, so if you didn't catch all that, he's describing the trip they took to the Great Smoky Mountains and saying that Doran seemed fine, and even asked to drive except for the time when he wanted to drink. And then, there was a trip to Myrtle Beach for Pam's birthday. This trip occurred from November 7th to 9th, or between 10 and 12 days before Doran's death. They took the trip with Pam's parents and a friend named Evelyn Autry, and according to Autry, while Doran wasn't 100%, he mostly seemed healthy and alert. On November 9th, the Laniers returned to Chinkapin and had a party for Pam's birthday, where multiple witnesses, including Autry, again said that Doran was doing pretty well. But then, the very next day, on November 10th, Pam made a call to Eastern Digestive Disease Center saying that Doran was complaining of severe abdominal pain, headaches, dizzy spells, and nausea. And this takes us to our third point, which is that between Doran's bulldozer accident and his death, Pam did take Doran to the doctor six times between his first appointment after the accident and his death, despite Doran's reluctance.
That was the thing that Doug kept telling me over and over. They want you to sign this plea because they're saying you should have forced him to go. I said, I got him there six times. If he says no, what am I supposed to do with him? Hold a gun to his head and put him in the vehicle? I said, it don't work that way. I said, you can't make a grown man do something that he does not want to do. Mm-hmm.
So let's plot those visits. Again, Doran was injured on September 1st or 2nd, and Pam took him to a doctor in Jacksonville, North Carolina, a few days later. Then on Sunday, September 14th, Pam took Doran to Dr. Jordan at Onslow Doctor's Care. The records show that Doran had bruising on his leg and possibly a mild infection. Dr. Jordan prescribed Doran an antibiotic and a muscle relaxer. During the week, Pam called Onslow Doctor's Care and said that Doran was, quote, taking too much medication and running a fever. She scheduled an appointment for Doran on Sunday, September 21st. At that appointment, Doran had clogged ears, chest congestion, coughing, and leg pain. He said that he had stopped taking his antibiotic after the first three pills. A urine analysis revealed that he had been taking pain medications and sedatives that he had not been prescribed. The doctor once again prescribed the antibiotic and Advil as needed. 6 days later, on Saturday, September 27th, Pam took Doran back to see Dr. Jordan at Onslow Doctor's Care. Dr. Jordan said that Doran was ataxic. In other words, he had difficulty walking. He had slurred speech and was completely out of it. Pam told a nurse that Doran was trying to self-cure with Darvocet, and the nurse noted that Doran was unable to walk without assistance. After this doctor's visit, Pam and others said that Doran started to do better. As we've already noted, Tom Hatcher said that he and his wife went with the Lanniers to the Great Smoky Mountains in early October, and Doran seemed fine. And then, as we noted, there was a trip to Myrtle Beach from November 7th to 9th, during which Doran again seemed to be doing relatively well. But then, Pam made the call to Eastern Digestive the next day, saying that Doran was in pain and nauseous. They couldn't schedule an appointment until November 13th, so Pam took Doran to urgent care in Surf City on November 11th, where Doran saw Dr. W.N. Young. An interview with Dr. Young indicates that Pam, quote, asked Dr. Young how she could have her husband stop taking turkey warmer, a medication used to treat parasitic worm infections in turkeys. Dr. Young diagnosed Doran with diverticulitis, or infected pouches in his digestive tract. Otherwise, Dr. Young described Doran's appearance as normal and said that he walked in without assistance. Dr. Young prescribed a high roughage diet of Kellogg's All Brand Buds, Metamucil, and Citrusil. He also prescribed Phenergan for motion sickness. The doctor's notes indicated that Pam could give Doran Phenergan injections if he was in too much pain to inject himself.
2 days later, Pam and her father took Doran to Eastern Digestive to see Dr. Kurt Vernon for his November 13th appointment. According to Dr. Vernon's notes from that visit, Doran described no change in his ability to remember things and no weakness or loss of motor strength. The notes also state that Doran's skin color was normal. But Dr. Vernon was concerned about Doran's condition, listing pancreatic malignancy, colitis, alcoholism, and lymphoma as potential problems. The notes also indicate that Pam told a nurse that Doran had taken some old medication from the family medicine cabinet and given himself a shot meant for cows, with Pam showing the nurse the syringe he used to do it. The notes also say that Pam asked the nurse not to tell Doran that she said this because then he'd get mad at her. At the end of the appointment, Dr. Vernon scheduled a CT scan for the next day and a colonoscopy for November 17th. Colin talked with Pam's father, Whitey, about his recollection of this doctor's appointment and Doran's willingness to see doctors after his accident.
And was it your understanding that Dorian didn't want to see the doctor after the bulldozer accident?
Yeah, he didn't want to see the doctor. I took him to a doctor myself one time before this happened. And a doctor, talked to me and said he needed to go to the hospital, and he wouldn't go to the hospital.
And why do you think he didn't want to go to see doctors?
I don't know. He just didn't like doctors. He wanted to go back home and work what he could. He was a working man.
So the next day, November 14th, Doran was a no-show for a CT scan. According to the nurse's notes, quote, patient notified and refused.
Later, Doran did appear for a preparation visit for his colonoscopy on November 16th. The notes from that visit indicate that Doran had fever, chills, nausea, and vomiting. Doran was referred to the ER and showed up, but left before he was treated. According to Pam, Doran got sick of waiting and left. And then we have the sixth and final doctor's visit. The next day, November 17th, Pam took Doran back to see Dr. Jordan at Onslow Medical Care 2 days before his death. According to the notes from that visit, Doran complained of nausea, diarrhea, body aches, fever, and vomiting. That said, Dr. Jordan thought that Doran seemed to be doing okay and made no notes about Doran's skin color being odd. In fact, Dr. Jordan's notes indicate that Doran looked better than when Dr. Jordan last saw him on September 27th. But Dr. Jordan did diagnose Doran with gastroenteritis, or an inflammation of the stomach and intestines, and prescribed Phenergan and Cipro. The following day, November 18th, Pam called Eastern Digestive and said that Doran was unable to take the prep drink for his colonoscopy because it was making him sick. She also said she was giving him Phenergan and Pedialyte. And then finally, we have November 19th, the day that Doran died. Without getting into too much detail about that day just yet, we have one last set of notes from the nurse at Eastern Digestive. It notes that she received a call from Lanniers and that Doran couldn't control himself. According to the notes, quote, he states he is taking Phenergan and it is not helping. I advised patient to proceed to ER and he refused, quote, would wait it out. Patient encouraged to go, but refused.
That takes us to the fourth point, which we've already touched upon with clips from both Pam and her father, Whitey. And that's that after his accident, Doran didn't want to go to the doctor. This is the second instance in which the Deadly Women episode was accurate in its own way.
It's only a minor injury, but Dorian needs constant attention. He doesn't trust doctors, preferring his wife to take charge.
This is something that's not really open to reasonable dispute. Every witness for the prosecution and the defense all testified that Doran had an aversion to doctors, and indicated that it was tough to get him to change his mind. For instance, here's Mitchell Sanders.
You would say, Doran, you need to go to a doctor, and he'd be slurring speech, and you could understand him saying no, that he didn't want to go.
And here's Mitchell's mother, Lisa Paget, who would talk to both her son and Doran after the accident.
Well, he would tell me that, you know, Doran's had a rough week, or he's not feeling good or something, you know. Then my son called me one day. One of the last times I talked to Doran, Mitchell called me and he said, Mom, Doran's not doing good. He said, but we can't get him to go to the doctor. And I said, have you all told him to go? And he said, yeah. He said, we have all tried to get him to go to the doctor. He said, but he won't go. So anyhow, the next time I talked to Doran, I told him, I said, Doran, Mitchell said that you're not feeling good, or that you're, you know, real sick and that you need to go to a doctor. And he said, I don't need to go to a doctor. He said, he was a private person. He wouldn't tell you if he'd been to the doctor that day. He wouldn't tell you.
And when Colin visited with Pam in prison, she related a conversation she'd had recently with her case manager on the same subject.
He said, Miss Lanier, are you sorry for the crime you committed? He said, do you have any remorse? I said, no. He said, do you know what you just told me? I said, yes, I know what I just told you. I said, no. He said, how can you say no to the remorse? He said, I see you coming in and out of classifications all the time and the responsibility they put on you. He said, and you're telling me no. I said, Mr. Ogden, I don't want to go in my business with you. I said, but I'm trying to fight now for my innocence. And I said, I did not do it. So no, I have no remorse. The only remorse I have was that I didn't maybe throw him across my shoulder and take him and throw him in a car and take him to the doctor. I said, that's the only remorse I have. And he looked at me and he said, it just don't sound like you. I mean, I know it sounded cold, but it's the truth. I don't have no remorse because I did what I could do on my part. What part he would let me. Yeah, I wish now I had a purity bout, knocked him in the head, being honest, and threw him across my shoulder and took him there and made him stay, you know, but I had done the best I could.
And finally, that gets us to the fifth point, which we've also already touched upon a bit. Here's Pam's mother, Shirley.
And what was your sense about Doran and seeing doctors and whether he wanted to see doctors or not after his accident?
He didn't feel he needed a doctor. He figured that the farm stuff would take care of him. He said, that's what I've always done, and that's it'll take care of me.
Several witnesses would testify about Doran self-medicating through traditional and non-traditional means. Here's Mitchell Sanders talking about Doran's medication habits.
I remember if he'd be about passed out or something, he'd have pills in his pocket and don't know where they come from. Or there'd be pills on the floor, don't know where he's getting the pills from. I know he made the comment that the same medication that he gives his cows, I didn't see him give himself a shot, but they said that he gave himself a shot with the same type of needle, the great big needle that he give the cows that he had. He said if it would cure the cows, it could cure him.
Before, we discussed how Doran's condition would ebb and flow, and most of those ebbs seem to coincide with a particular type of self-medication. Here's Pam's father, Whitey.
He was good. After he got hurt, when he would go down to the turkey house and come back, he wasn't the same man. He drank some water out there to the turkey house.
So he told you that he used to drink out of the water that he would use to give the turkey medication to the turkeys?
Yeah. You take a swat out of a speak before it goes there. I've seen him drink that.
Oh, you actually saw him drinking out of that system?
I just speak it water fighting for run to water right there.
Whitey is referencing a medication that Doran would give the turkeys to promote weight gain and turn their skin pink.
or Roxrosone, and Dorn had a medication system set up at the farm where he would dilute packets of 3-nitro into water and deliver it to the turkeys through a hose. The hose had a bypass valve that would allow you to drink fresh water, but several witnesses say that after the accident, Dorn would drink a yellowish water out of the hose without using the bypass valve. One of those witnesses was Mitchell Sanders, and another was Pam's mother, Shirley.
We went up there one Saturday afternoon, my friend and I did, and Dustin came running in and said, Dorn's out there drinking out of that turkey hose. And, of course, I went out there, but he's still drunk out of it. Now, what was in it, I could not tell you.
Right.
But they said that he was not supposed to be drinking out of it.
But while Shirley didn't know what was in the hose, Pam said that Dorn full well knew that he wasn't supposed to be drinking out of it.
He would always tell us, do not wash the cars or the trucks when I have the medicator going. Do not let nobody drink out of the hoses when the turkey medicator was going. But yet, he would go out there and pick it up and drink out of it sometime, you know. And I would say, well, you got turkey medicator. Did you not just tell me that earlier today not to do? Yes, but, you know, it's not that much. I'm just a little bit. It's not hurting me. He said, I just need some fresh water. He would come up with these different reasons why he would have to do things like that.
This provides a good transition to the third piece of evidence against Pam at trial, with the first two pieces again being the drowning of Johnny Ray and the fire at the Ludie Brown house. This third piece of evidence was the testimony of Allie Bradshaw. As we already noted, she testified about Pam preventing people from seeing Dorn when he was sick, with the only corroboration being the testimony by James and Doris Brock about what happened in early September. Bradshaw testified that there was a 3-day period toward the end of September when Dorn was zonked out with, quote, swollen phlegm coming out of his mouth. According to Bradshaw, Dorn would just lay there in bed, and Pam and she had to physically move him to try to sit up. At one point, they put plastic on Dorn in the bed because he was defecating on himself. With regard to those 3 days, Bradshaw would testify as follows.
Question. Did you see the defendant feed him anything during that time period?
No, sir. Well, I'll say about the 3rd day, I kept telling Pam, this man's going to die if he doesn't get something to eat. Get some help from somewhere. And we did get... She took ice cream and put it on her finger and would stick it in his mouth, trying to get him to eat.
Okay, you've said several times you told the defendant that she needed to take him to the hospital. She needed to get the defendant, the victim, to the hospital. Her response to you would be what?
He's not going to the hospital. He doesn't want to go to the hospital. And I told her, we had him sitting up one day and I said, Pam, we've got to get this man to the hospital. And Dorn was... She was behind him, with him sitting up, and all he could do was mumble, and it was wom, wom, wom.
Bradshaw would go on to testify about an event around the same time when Dorn fell out of his truck and was on the ground, completely out of it, having defecated himself. Bradshaw testified that Tammy Brown, the wife of Dorn's nephew, got a camcorder and filmed Dorn. The prosecution was able to get the video, but not the audio, of the recording admitted as demonstrative evidence to show what Bradshaw saw. So now, as listeners, you're going to have the opposite experience, hearing but not seeing what Tammy recorded.
Don't video me. My God. Show him his stinking drawers out here. If he's shitting his drawers. There's a man over there, too. He just says, leave him alone. I don't need to see him laying out here like this, Tammy.
No. Tammy, don't you think she should go on to the Majesty's office and put him somewhere where he can get well? Now, he's been a month.
I would.
I'm going to call him as soon as we get him in the... And I can't afford that. I just cannot.
Can we call him?
Hell yeah, I'll call him. She said give him rug burn. Hell, it's better than the damn mess of hanging out over there in the kitchen all day. And damn flies are
going. He's asleep right now. I ain't got the whole thing on there.
The prosecution introduces video to show that Pam was callous to Dorn's suffering and either reckless or malicious in failing to get him medical attention. Again, to support their theory that Pam was poisoning him. Colin asked Pam about the making of this video, and here was her response.
Tammy wanted him videoed. He was fine. He was fine that day, fine. He goes to the turkey houses. He locks me and Tammy up in the turkey house. I don't know why he done that. He locked us up in there, and we were trying to get out. And then when he finally let us out, and he was putting medication, now I will tell you that, he was putting medication in the turkey house that day. When he did let us out, he started acting funny. And we were both frustrated. I was so mad. It was hot. I mean, I'm going to be honest. It was hot in them turkey houses, and here I was locked up in that turkey house. And so we got home, and he fell out of the truck, and he wouldn't get up. And I started fussing at him and told him, you know, I'm tired of it. You know, you got to stop this. And I said a few choice Sunday school words, too. I'm going to be honest with you. And she says, I want him to see himself like this when he's acting like this. She says, I'm going to go home and grab the camera recorder. So she come back and she videoed it. I did not ask her to do that. I didn't even bring it up because I hadn't even thought about something like that. And she did. When doing, she took it home with her that night. She showed it to Matt. Then she gave it back to us, and I showed it to Doran the next day. And he was in good mind that day. I mean, good mind when he seen it. And it upset him that he was acting like that. I said, but not enough to get some help. I said, you know, if you're going to do this and you need help, there's something wrong. You don't act like this.
No one has an exact date for this video, but it seems like there are two options. Either it was made right before Pam did take Doran to the doctor on September 27th, or it was soon after this doctor's visit and just before the Laniers took the trip with Tom and Paige Hatcher, with Tom again saying that Doran was doing well. Nonetheless, Bradshaw's testimony was damaging, even if her testimony wasn't much different from the defense witnesses who said that Doran refused to go to the doctor. And that's because she was there every day and testifying that Pam wasn't taking Doran to the doctor despite his obvious distress. So what happened to turn Allie Bradshaw against Pam Lanier? Well, one possibility comes from Bradshaw herself. When Pam heard that Bradshaw was making statements against her to the police, she decided to record a phone call with her former friend.
Do you remember the circumstances of that phone call that you had with her that was recorded?
I recorded it, I think. Wasn't it? But then me recorded it? I think I did. I recorded that phone call. Because, you know, they told me that she was saying that I did not. And you come, he died in November. You come to my house, and my parents were there in January, and saying that they were questioning you about it.
Now, unfortunately, the audio of that call has been lost to the years, but we do have a transcript of the call. Here's the pertinent portion with Susan saying the lines for Pam Lanier and Robbie saying the lines for Allie Bradshaw.
Well, listen, can I ask you one thing?
Uh-huh.
Did you not think I did everything I could for Doran when you were living here?
The only thing that I could say negative is that I think we should have carried him to the doctor.
Well, he wouldn't go.
I mean, that's the only negative thing I can say, Pam.
You can't take one when they won't go, though.
But it was like those days that we rolled him and tumbled him on that bed, you know, and I really thought he was going to get pneumonia and die then.
Boy, he was sick that day.
He was so sick. That was the only negative thing that I can say is that we should have got him to the hospital. That's the only thing I can say.
But the rest of it...
I mean, if he had been my husband, he would have gone.
Well, I mean, I would have took him if he would have agreed to it then. And even after you went back to school in October, I mean, he let us take him 3 times after that. But it was like a fight to get him there and a fight to get him back. I mean, he showed his butt every time he went.
That's the only thing that I can say.
But you don't feel that I neglected him in no way?
No.
Thank you, because I have heard so many stories that you thought I was killing him here. I said, that don't sound like Allie.
No, you know good and well I ain't said no such thing.
I said, Allie has... I mean, I...
They're trying to say that I helped kill him, you know?
Now, this call isn't drastically different from Bradshaw's testimony at trial, but it does clarify that her complaint about Pam's behavior was only with regard to those 3 days when Doran was bedridden. It's really the accusatory tone of Bradshaw's trial testimony that probably hurt Pam, and based on this call, you might see why. According to Bradshaw herself, law enforcement was saying that she helped Pam kill Doran, so it's easy to see how this could lead to Bradshaw shifting blame off of herself and onto Pam. And then, there's the second possibility. The notes from Bradshaw's police interview indicate that she gave it while her husband was present. Yes, the same husband who had abused her and kicked her out before Pam and Doran took her in. It's impossible to ascertain how this bore upon what Bradshaw had to say about what happened to Doran, but it's easy to imagine the effect not being good for Pam. Now, we noted before that Bradshaw testified that Pam kept Doran from seeing people while he was sick. But she also identified the following people as having come to visit Doran when he was sick, some of them multiple times. Both of Pam's parents, Doran's father, Matt and Tammy Brown, Durwood and Vivian Parker, the man who purchased Doran's sister's house, and Lois Sloan. And that's not even including Mitchell Sanders, who was at the house almost every day, and other people we have mentioned, such as Tom and Paige Hatcher and Evelyn Autry. And all of those witnesses gave good, or at least neutral, testimony about Pam trying to get Doran to see a doctor, and or Doran being reluctant to see a doctor.
That leaves one final person mentioned by Allie Bradshaw, and the fourth piece of evidence against Pam Lanier at her trial. That final person was Doran's friend, Jackie Hatcher. This takes us back to November 19th, 1997, the day Doran died. According to Jackie Hatcher's testimony at trial, at some point that day, Jackie saw Doran driving his truck and had a conversation with him, with Doran seeming to be in good shape. Hatcher did not testify that Doran's skin looked odd at this point. Then, at some point later that day on the 19th, John Lockerman came to the Lanier residence. Lockerman was the person who delivered the turkey medications to the Laniers, and Pam remembers his visit on the 19th.
I remember the day he died. He was yellow. I can tell you that. I don't
remember. Was he yellow before that at all? Before that?
No, nothing like that. I never seen anything. When I tell you he was as yellow as that sign over there, the yellow ones, mm-hmm. He was that yellow. His pupils in his eyes was even that yellow.
And when did you first see him and he looked yellow on that day?
God, you're asking me a hard question. Do I need a time limit? I don't remember if it was morning or I don't remember. I know the turkey man come that day. I think it was that same day because, you know, he was talking about how good he talked. But he said he does have some jaundice. I said he does. I said, you know, and I said, I'm trying to get him now to let's go get it checked out. And he had told Doran. He had talked to Doran. Doran was talking very well that day, very well. And, but I told him later, I said, Doran, I said, you're getting yeller and yeller. I said, what is wrong? I said, why are you like that? I said, you need to go get, I said, even your eyeballs now is turning. I know that. He said, but just give me a little bit of time. Let's see what happens. He said, if it don't clear up in a little bit, I'll go. He said, I promise I'll go this time.
And the turkey guy coming, is he picking turkeys up or is he delivering medication?
No, he's delivering medication.
Okay. Do you know whether Doran mixed a barrel of 3-nitro with water that day?
I know he went out to the turkey houses, but 100%, I can't tell you yes or no. I can't tell you that because I don't know. But I know that he bought medication.
Pam's memory lines up with John Lockerman's testimony. He testified that he did come to the Lanier residence on November 19th, and that when he interacted with Doran, he looked yellow, but his mind seemed to be working okay, and he could communicate with him. Lockerman's testimony also makes it seem likely that Doran mixed the turkey medication that same day, because Lockerman testified that after you mix medication with water, it would be, quote, gone within a day's time, one flock of turkeys would drink it all in one day. So when Pam was later charged with murder, her defense team went to the farm and they, quote, found a barrel of the solution that Mr. Lanier had mixed prior to his death, which is presumably the same barrel that he mixed on the day he died and had not yet been depleted, so its contents were still there.
Returning back to November 19th, as we noted before, at some point the Laniers called Eastern Digestive with a nurse telling Doran to go to the ER and Doran refusing and saying that he, quote, would wait it out. I asked Pam to fill in the blanks for the rest of the day.
He didn't act out of the ordinary except his skin color was bad and his eyes was beginning to turn yellow.
Okay. And so then what happens throughout the rest of the day?
He went and laid down and Dustin and Mitchell went to the back of the farm and me and Calla was in the house with him. And Jackie come up and I told him that he was resting. I said, come on in. I said, he's resting. And he said, well, I just come to check on him, see how he was doing. While he was talking to me, Doran come out of the room and come in there. And he said, hey, buddy. And then that's when his leg started collapsing. And that's when I called 911.
Jackie Hatcher's testimony doesn't differ too much from Pam's memory. He testified about coming to the Lanier house, noting that Doran had yellow-orange skin, seeing him walking around like a zombie, and having the seizure that Pam described. In his testimony, Jackie also said that Pam was preparing a Pedialyte drink for Doran and checking his blood pressure. Pam and Jackie only differ on the impetus for the 911 call. Pam says she made the decision to call 911, while Jackie says he told Pam that Doran was going to die and that she needed to call 911. As with Allie Bradshaw, there's nothing overtly incriminatory about Jackie Hatcher's testimony against Pam, but it's the tone of his testimony that's important. Jackie clearly seems to be saying that Pam should have sought help for Doran before he arrived. He also seems to be implying that Pam might have been poisoning Doran when she was making his Pedialyte drink. So, why does Pam think that Jackie turned on her?
Jackie and his nephew, Robbie Hatchard, which was on the sheriff department at the time, tried to come buy the farm from me after Doran died. And they offered me, Daddy could tell you more, I think, on that one. I'm trying to say probably 20, 30, 40,000 less than what Doug did when I was going to sell it to him.
And is that what you think turned Jackie against you?
Mm-hmm.
Was that you were going to sell it to Doug?
Because he was sure up there trying to get that farm from me really hard.
Mm-hmm. As with Allie Bradshaw, there's some support for the claim that Jackie Hatcher shaded his testimony against Pam. For instance, at trial, the defense called a man named Greg Sanders, who testified that soon after Doran's death,
Jackie told me standing outside the door that him and Pam both had tried to get Doran to go to the doctor, and he wouldn't go, and that Doran had even cussed at him before when he was trying to get him to go.
Returning to the night of November 19th, whether it was Pam or Jackie's idea, Pam called 911, and the husband and wife EMT team of Pam and Harold Hatcher arrived at the Lanier residence at around 6 p.m., Harold Hatcher wasn't too surprised by the call because he knew about Doran's proclivities.
So somebody on the older brother told me, said Doran had an accident on a bulldozer and messed it, had a bass on his leg.
Right.
He's always said he wouldn't go to doctors. Okay. And all. So, and I was told, said that he was said if the medicine's good enough for the animals, it's good enough for him.
This then informed what Harold did when he arrived at the Lanier residence.
So that's when we got an ambulance call and I told her, she said, Doran, I said, Pam, let me go in first, because Doran's been doing something crazy. So I told her not to get out of the ambulance. Me and the driver, we got out. And I walked in, it was Doran there. And I said, he was alarming the yellow. He said, he's here, I don't feel too good. I said, Doran, you don't look too good. And he didn't. He was really, he was alarming the yellow. And so I let him check him. And I went, took his wife inside. I said, hey, what has he been taking? She said, nothing I know of. So then I come back and they always said about Doran didn't like to go to hospital. I said, Doran, for the sake of your family, your young, they're scared to death. We got to go to hospital. He said, all right, here I go. So he took off to the hospital. And on the way, we're talking, Joe talking. He said, here I've done some stupid things in my life. I said, well, we all have. And it didn't dawn on me, because we're talking just good right here. I didn't look like he was on deathbed. He was still coherent, talking all that other junk about he was out of it this year. Doran was very coherent.
The records show that Doran arrived at the emergency room at 6:25 p.m. According to a number of witnesses, Doran remained pretty coherent for the next 4 hours. As we already reported at the start of episode 1, Pam Hatcher, the other EMT, testified that Doran said he had done this to himself and that he wouldn't have made it this far without his wife. Pam Lanier's father, Whitey, remembers something similar. He testified that Doran told him, "I messed myself up," and quote, "What's done, I've done to myself." When Colin talked to Whitey, he went into more detail about his recollection of the night that Doran died.
I went to the hospital with him. When he was there. I'd been in there and prayed with him about 10 minutes before it happened. 10 or 15 minutes. And I was standing right outside by the door there, close to when he passed away. But the doctor went in there and done something. Water come out and everything. He passed on away. I was right there.
And did you talk to Doran at the hospital?
Talk to him what?
Did you talk to him when he was at the hospital?
I sure did. Doctor wanted him to stay there that night, and I told him if he didn't want to stay, and I told him, I said, if you'll stay here with him, with him, I'll stay here with you. And I didn't hear it warn, so the nurse come in, said the doctor wants to come in and see him. And I left out, and the doctor went in there in a couple of seconds. I watered stuff, hit the floor, and I knew something was wrong right then. Or he had gone in and something busted in him.
This is a common thread among everyone we've talked to about this case. Everyone says that Doran was coherent and even wanted to leave the ER before the doctor performed a rectal exam at about 10:30 p.m. They all seem convinced that something went wrong with this rectal exam, causing Doran's death at 10:57 p.m. It's an interesting theory, but it's one I haven't really pursued, because Doran did have lethal levels of arsenic in his system, and his causes of death are listed as renal failure, liver failure, and cardiorespiratory arrest, all of which are consistent with arsenic poisoning. Besides, proving that Doran's arsenic levels weren't the cause of his death would seem to be a bit of a Pyrrhic victory, because it wouldn't really undermine the state's claim that Pam was poisoning Doran. And in terms of that claim, the state had a fifth and final piece of evidence against Pam, that over a four-year period from early 1994 to early 1998, Pam had purchased over $10,000 in medication. That's because, essentially right after Pam met Doran, she started suffering from a series of medical conditions. Constant headaches, skin lesions, and shingles. According to Mitchell Sanders, it was this last condition that had the biggest effect on Pam being able to take care of Doran.
She had the shingles real bad, and she had a hard enough time taking care of herself.
And here's Pam's own recollection of her physical condition at the time.
And what exactly were you going through at that time?
I was taking Nubain and Finnegan, and I had... One daughter says I didn't. I don't know what I had anymore, but I had some shingles. And they gave me the medication for pain. And they let me inject my own self. Mm-hmm. And that was a big issue. They said that I wasn't thinking rationally. Well, I drove. I done everything else. I mean, I was doing rationally because it wasn't affecting me in no way like that.
Right.
I mean, I could drive my vehicles. I could go to work. I didn't miss no work. I didn't do none of that stuff. But I will say this. When the turkey houses was, the turkeys were gone and the turkey houses was cleaned out, everything else, I didn't have headaches or nothing. I mean, nothing anymore. Everything went away. And then I, you know, somebody told me one time they thought it was the pneumonia from that smells and stuff that might have caused the problem. But everything started going away and I didn't have no more problems.
Would you say that you became addicted to the medications?
Yes. I did for a few months, and then when I put it down, I was seeing myself going from one shot a day to two shots a day, and actually I even took three sometime, and yes, I did.
According to the state, Pam was manipulating the system and seeing multiple doctors to get more prescription meds, and they tried to use this manipulation to buttress the Black Widow archetype they were pushing, and also to argue that Pam might have killed Doran to get insurance money and fuel her addiction.
And so that was the case against Pam Lanier. Johnny Ray's drowning, the Ludie Brown fire, Allie Bradshaw's testimony, Jackie Hatcher's testimony, and the evidence connected to Pam's own medical conditions and drug use. By itself, this evidence doesn't sound very impressive, but Pam was Doran's primary caretaker, and he died from chronic and acute arsenic poisoning. So once you eliminate the impossible, you're left with the result that Pam must have poisoned Doran. Now, of course, though, we've previewed the main other possibility for Doran's death throughout this episode. That Doran poisoned himself, specifically through his ingestion of the turkey medication. Why does 3-nitro turn turkey meat into a pleasing pink color? Because it contains arsenic. That arsenic is primarily organic in form, meaning it's arsenic that's bonded with carbon, but it also contains arsenic in partially inorganic form, meaning arsenic in its pure, metallic form. So, of course, Pam's defense attorneys sought out expert opinions about whether ingesting this turkey medication, this 3-nitro, could have caused the arsenic poisoning that Doran died from. But they didn't like the responses they were getting. Defense counsel consulted with Dr. Paige Hudson, who had worked on about 50 arsenic cases. Dr. Hudson told them that 3-nitro had mostly organic arsenic and that, quote, organic arsenic does not have much of an edge to it, in other words, less kick, than inorganic arsenic does. Pam's attorney, W. Douglas Parsons, had Dr. Hudson do some testing on the 3-nitro, and Parsons later prepared the following memo for Pam's file.
Dr. Hudson called WDP this afternoon and informed WDP that he had done some preliminary analysis based on the information which I discussed with him at our meeting of November 10th, 2000. In Dr. Hudson's opinion, with the 3-nitro mixed in proper dilution, according to the instructions on the packet, that he thought it would be very difficult to ingest enough fluid to result in the levels which were present in Doran Lanier's body at autopsy. Dr. Hudson did express an opinion that if taken otherwise, such as with peanut butter or in iced tea, that there is enough inorganic arsenic contained in 3-nitro to be significant, in other words, to result in the levels which were found in Doran Lanier. Dr. Hudson prepared a letter to me with this information, as well as some hard numbers he had computed, and I instructed Dr. Hudson that I would prefer he not mail a letter, but to discuss it with Jack and I after he completed all of his work and we had the results of any toxicologist's opinions. Dr. Hudson agreed.
Dr. Hudson's letter is not in the defense file, so you can only imagine that the results were not favorable to the theory that Doran died from the turkey water. The defense also contacted a second arsenic expert, Dr. Alphonse Poklas, who was possibly the leading expert on arsenic poisoning in the country at the time. But there's also not a report by Dr. Poklas in the defense files. We do have notes from an interview of the defense counsel after trial, and those notes indicate that the defense counsel was asked whether Doran's arsenic poisoning could have come from the turkey water. According to those notes, quote, Mr. Poklas stated that it was not in fact possible, something to do with the arsenic found in Doran versus the type of arsenic in the turkey medicator. So in the end, Dr. Poklas was not called at trial. And in an audio interview of trial counsel by a Wake Forest student, defense counsel went into more detail about this decision.
For whatever reason, I don't think we used Poklas, and if we didn't, then I know why. If we didn't, that means that his testimony was harmful to us.
Yeah. So I guess, would you mind sort of, with your conversation with Poklas, was he really your main source for the arsenic poisoning and the fact that Doran could not have gotten that amount of poisoning from the turkey medicine?
Yeah, he was. At the time that we found him, we did a lot of research on who we thought would be kind of the guru in this area, and Poklas was doing stuff a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, he is a, I guess he's still living, I don't know, but Poklas is... at that time was, in our opinion, the most knowledgeable man about this type of thing. He had done a lot of research, a lot of articles on it, and so that's why we hired him.
So then, how is it that the prosecution offered the extremely favorable plea bargains that we discussed last episode? Well, that takes us to the most famous line ever uttered by Paul Newman on the silver screen.
Just like today when he kept coming back at me. With nothing.
Yeah, well, sometimes nothing can be a real cool hand.
You see, while the defense had nothing, their apparent technique of not having their experts do reports meant the state was in the dark, and that allowed the defense to pull off the ultimate bluff.
Pam had told us that the turkey medicator, which came in the form of water with a certain percentage of arsenic mixed in it, she had told us that Doran frequently drank from that during the heat of the summer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we took that and were running with it. And we slowed down very quickly, as far as that being our primary defense, whenever we met with, I believe it was Alphonso Poklas up in Richmond, maybe. And he told us that just, you know, couldn't be the case because we had the ingredients of the, well, in the actual of the mixture as far as the percentage of arsenic, and it was very small. But we ran that as a bluff as far as a defense that we, while maintaining our ethics, we absolutely ran a hard impression that we had a valid defense regarding ingestion of turkey-laced water.
But the defense couldn't bluff Pam, who maintained that she didn't kill Doran and wouldn't take the plea deals. And the defense couldn't bluff the jury without an actual expert. On the other hand, at trial, prosecutor Dean Bowman asked John Lockerman whether he'd ever had another turkey grower using 3-nitro die of arsenic poisoning in his 20 years. His response, not to my knowledge. And during closing arguments, Bowman made the claim to the jury that even drinking 250 gallons of water from the turkey medicator hose wouldn't be enough to kill you. And so, after eliminating the impossible, the jury convicted Pam Lanier of murder. But what if the state hadn't really eliminated the impossible? And what if there were a way to prove Pam's innocence and Doran's actual cause of death 17 years later?
I would say, absent other information, this would seem to be the major cause.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, when you see the liver failure and that the immediate cause of death was cardiorespiratory arrest, I mean, that's pretty telling.
Arsenic and Old Lace, next time on Undisclosed.
big thank you to everybody who makes Undisclosed possible and has made this series possible. Thank you to our sponsors who help us put on our episodes week after week. Thank you to Mital Dalhan, our executive producer, for helping keep this ship afloat. Thank you to Rebecca Lavoie, our fantastic audio producer, and also the co-host and producer of a couple of my favorite podcasts, including Crime Writers On. Do not miss her podcast. Thank you to Baluki for our logo, to Christy for maintaining our website. A big thank you to AC Parham for helping with research on the Pam Lanier series. And also, Rebecca Lavoie will be hosting our addendum. Make sure to tag Rebecca in your questions, anything related to this case. Use the hashtag UDAddendum, and Rebecca Lavoie's Twitter handle is at REBLavoie, L-A-V-O-I-E. Also, a big thank you to our listeners. Thanks for coming back week after week. Check us out and make sure to follow us online on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is at Undisclosed Pod. And please do not forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and rate us. Thanks so much. See you in a week.